Welcome back. This is Mike Harris, broadcasting on VeteransToday.com, also broadcasting on FreedomSlips.com, Studio B, Revolution Radio. And today is Thursday, April 28th, 2016. My guest for this hour is Kwala Lapele. KP, Brian to his friends. I do my best.
Lapele. Yeah, it does sound like a koala bear. So I guess, yeah.
Oh, come on. I speak German. I speak Russian. I almost speak a little bit of Spanish, but the Hawaiian language eludes me.
Well, so. That's okay. We're, you know, we each have our places. So,
I just laugh at myself. I, my perfectionist tendencies, you know, it's just how it is.
Well, I was wondering if you spoke, do you speak, what do they speak in Syria?
They speak Arabic. And English.
Do you speak Arabic?
Yes, they do.
Oh, you do. I mean, you do.
No, I do not. I do not.
Oh, okay.
I don't speak Arabic.
Okay. But, well, I know you're very well-rounded, and I honor and respect anyone who speaks more than one language relatively fluently.
I think it's one of the big failings of our education system. You know, it truly is that we're not educating all of our students to speak other languages. Every other country in the world, produces students that speak 2, 3, 5, 6 languages. When I was running for governor of Arizona back in the 2005 and 2006, that was one of my the pieces of my platform is how to improve education, and that would be to go back to teaching Latin in school, because if you understand Latin, it is easy then to master Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, French, and the next thing you know, you can speak 4, 5, 6 languages by mastering one. And I think that is a big failing within the U.S. Paradigm for what we call education these days.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, for myself, I took a couple of years of Spanish at one point, and that definitely helps me understand a little bit more about, you know, at least I can pick things out sometimes. And of course, also I had to speak I had to learn one language in graduate school for the chemistry. So I chose German, since most of the good journals back in the 1800s were written
by... German was the language of science and engineering back then.
Right. And so it's kind of like it was very, very helpful to me. And I'm really glad that, I was, quote, forced to do that. But, yeah, I think language is one of those things. And one thing I can relate over here, although not personally, most of the Hawaiian, if I learned Hawaiian, a lot of it is from playing music. And I learned to sing Hawaiian songs. And I heard a lot, you know, I would learn a lot from that. One of the things about a lot of people who grown up here in the last 25, 30, 40 years, they have been more and more started Hawaiian immersion classes for the children. And so they've learned Hawaiian from the ground up. And Hawaiian for many of them is as easy for them as speaking English. The thing about it is, and I don't know the full picture here, but a lot of the Polynesian languages are similar. So once you learn one, and it's similar to maybe what's going on, like for example, New Zealand. So I think it's really helpful to learn something other than English. If you're interested in going into Polynesian studies, perhaps learn Hawaiian or Maori or whatever else is there. But I think it's very valuable to, it's really helped me a lot just to, and even with the meanings of things, you know. So, that's kind of, I have not fluently learned Hawaiian. I learn on the go.
Well, here's the thing. People say, are you fluent? You know you're fluent whenever you can tell a joke in the foreign language and people will laugh and get it. Because humor is really that, it's really the test of fluency. Because if you can convey something in a humorous manner, if you can successfully tell a joke and to an audience of native speakers of that language, and they get it and they laugh, then you're good. You are fluent in that language. If you can't tell a joke, you might be very functionally conversational, but you're not yet fluent because you don't understand the nuance.
Right.
Anyway, that's just neither here nor there. So, you know, one of the things that you and I discussed privately, and I want to get a little bit of your take on, is this this movement in Hawaii that maybe the Hawaii isn't part of the United States legally. And that there is a movement starting over there to sort of take it back, make it into its own sovereign kingdom again. I know most people haven't heard of this. Most people probably don't have much interest. It doesn't affect them. But I think it would be a good thing to inform people what's going on, because this could set a precedent that could have far-reaching effects, you know, not just in the U.S., but globally.
Well, absolutely. That's one of the things that we learned, many of us learned. And of course, my body was not born here. My education was not from over here. And so I kind of ran around, you know, and I would hear these things about the overthrow of 1893. And I would see certain groups meeting once in a while, and I didn't really pay too much attention to all those things. I was just being here. And what happened last year was, so look, first of all, since on January 17th, 1893, anyone who knows almost very little about the sovereignty movement knows that date. That was the date that the Queen was not very courteously asked to step down and leave. And we'll get into that, they formed a provisional government. It was actually a group of business people who formed a provisional government, and then their idea was to annex it to the United States. I started studying this, and I did my own research 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago now. This Department of Interior has a wonderful habit of wanting to make native peoples a tribe. So they've done this with many Native American tribes, and I've heard various stories about that. But the thing about it is they had a series of questions that they were asking me, and said, they would talk about things about how do you see yourself as, or would you like to have a government-to-government relationship with the United States? And what they would constantly say was, we'd like to reestablish a Native Hawaiian United States government-to-government relationship. The answer to all these questions is basically they wanted to see how many people would like to be like a Native Hawaiian tribe. That's the essence of it. And I did the research into it, and I really just wanted to find out for myself. Well, wait a minute. I've heard stories about this. I've heard stories about the overthrow. And someone pointed me to someone pointed me to a video. It's called Hawaii versus U.S. Imperialism. It's actually part three. I don't know where part one and part two are, but it's part three. And I put a link to that there. It's called the Pinky Show video. And it's just a bunch of cats, cartoon cats that speak. There's no music, no anything. And it's about a 20-minute video that I watched. And I, part by part by part, I saw how this all came to pass, and every single bit of it at the time, according to international law at the time, every single bit of the takeover of Hawaii was illegal. And even the statehood vote Hawaii was eventually declared a territory. And even the statehood vote was essentially illegal according to international guidelines. So my education became 2 years ago when these DOI, Department of the Interior hearings were going on. The resounding answer to all of their questions was no. What do we want? We want the kingdom returned. We want the kingdom. That's what we want. And I would say of the people, it's been estimated about 95% of the people who are speaking at these hearings said no to the DOI, and they want the kingdom returned. And when I did my research, I found, and listening to that video, the Pinky Show video, it was very clear that the kingdom is still here. There is nothing that legally, there was not a legal annexation. If you were to do it legally, as I understand it, this is all as I understand it, but if you were to do it according to international law, what you do is you write a treaty of annexation. And this would be a treaty of annexation between the United States government and the government of the Kingdom of Hawaii. Well, that never happened. There is no treaty of annexation.
So they skipped that step.
They got around that step. And when we say they, who are we talking about? Okay, first of all, it was not actually the government itself that initiated this. The background, just a little bit of the background is, at one point here, we had missionaries come over from religions, and they were trying to convert people here to Christianity. The other part was that there are a lot of people found out this is a very great place to grow things. And one of the major things was sugar. It eventually became a big deal. Sugar plantation became a big deal over here. And so the people who are growing sugar, the companies, the corporations, Alexander and Baldwin, all these other, you know, CNH, California and Hawaiian Sugar, the Dole people. Anyway, this was the problem. Their problem was that when they sent their sugar to the U.S., which was their primary market, well, they had to pay this excise tax. So what their solution to it was, they would try, if they became a part of the United States, they would not have to pay that tax anymore. So that was part of their business idea. And so essentially, now consider that the Kingdom of Hawaii had treaties with many, many different nations, even with the United States. And instead of going through an appropriate process to annex the Kingdom of Hawaii to the United States, well, first of all, they knew that it probably would never work, because no one was going to, you know, the majority of the population, the majority of the Hawaiian population, Hawaiian-derived population, they were never going to go for this. So what was done, it was a series of steps. First of all, in 1887, there was an 1860, there were several constitutions. This was a constitutional monarchy. And in 1864, that was considered a good constitution, where the legislature and the people would elect elect people, and it would be balanced. It would be a balanced legislative arrangement. So, but in 1887, the growers, the business people, there was too much power for the monarch. The monarch could essentially make their own ideas, and it would just override what the business people wanted. So that's just a short and nasty version there. But what they did was they passed another constitution which greatly diminished the powers of the monarch, and that was in 1887. It's locally called the Bayonet Constitution, I don't know if any bayonets were actually involved, but it was a forced. There were some problems at the time. I know a lot of people consider there were problems with King Kalakaua, who was the monarch at the time, and there were just some issues with his management of the kingdom. But in any event, he was basically forced to sign this document. And once that happened, the monarch's powers were greatly decreased. Then what came about was this group of business people. They're mostly American derived, or they might have been born in Hawaii, but they were from the United States originally. And they wanted to, they realized, they started, as I have read it, they started planning a secession, C-E-S-S-I-O-N, of the kingdom, or of Hawaii, to the United States quite a few years prior to this. There were various committees set up. There were various things that they would meet in secret and discuss their plans. Well, what happened was, just very short part of it, was that on January, King Kalakaua took a trip to California for health reasons and passed away. So his sister, Queen Liliuokalani, she took over as monarch. And after a short time, after a couple of years, she was, on January 14th, she was intending to go back to the Constitution of 1864, where the monarch had a more balanced power with the legislative body. And some of the things that I have read about that are like, once that happened, all of a sudden, this group, which was kind of locally known as annexationists, or the Hawaiian annexation group, I don't recall the exact name right now, but they
kind of wanted to sell out the native people and make it part of the USA.
Right. All the funny thing is, what I just recently found out was that they, when this happened, January 14th, the overthrow is the 17th. Well, they formed a committee of safety, because they were afraid that if they went back to the old constitution, that they wouldn't have as much power and influence. And when I saw that word committee of safety, and I saw that it was enacted on January 14th, I said, what does that sound like that happened right after 9/11? What department did we form was formed in this country?
Yeah. The Department of Homeland Security there to keep us all safe and deprive us of our rights.
Right. So, to me, that was exactly the same thing. And so on January 17th, the head of this group, which I believe was Lauren Thurston, of this annexation group, decided to take military action, and not calling it military action. He contacted the John Stevens, who was the U.S. delegate to the Kingdom of Hawaii, and he asked him to bring on troops so that they would station outside of the where the Queen's palace, the government buildings. And essentially what happened then was that there was not any, as I understand it, there was not any gunfire or anything like that. There was just the military threat that was present. And she was asked, forced to step down from her position as monarch. And one of the things that was very important about that was that when she had already prepared a statement, she knew that these things were going on. And she said that she said that I yield to the superior force of the United States of America, whose minister John Stevens has caused United States troops to be landed in Honolulu, and declared that he would support the said provisional government. Now, to avoid any collision of armed forces and perhaps loss of life, I do, under this protest and impelled by said force, yield my authority until such time as the government of the United States shall, upon the facts being presented to it, undo the action of its representatives and reinstate me in the authority I claim as constitutional sovereign. So actually, she did not step down, abdicate as queen. And she did not. The other important thing was these guys had already figured out something about they were going to have a provisional government. And then they had already figured it out. She did not surrender. She did not yield to the provisional government. She yielded to the superior force of the United States of America. So, I mean, there's so many details you could go into about this. But essentially, this was an illegal takeover by this group of business people, which was then eventually debated in the U.S. Congress. And many of the Congress people were just saying, we can't annex these people. This was, we have a treaty with them. So what they did was they eventually forced through a joint resolution bringing in this provisional government, which later became a republic, the Republic of Hawaii. They passed a joint resolution which said that whereas the government of the Republic of Hawaii, having signified its consent to be annexed, they did not say the Kingdom of Hawaii. They said the Republic of Hawaii. So that was the illegal act. There were several illegal things going on here. That was one. That was another. And then when they came up with the statehood ballot, which, of course, was very popular with many people in 1959, according to the international law, you're supposed to have three things on there. That you're supposed to have three choices, which is incorporation as a state, or your free association as something like a territory, and then third, there was another third one, independence. Well, the only choice that was on this ballot was, shall Hawaii immediately be admitted into the Union as a state? And then there were a couple others about the boundaries of the state and other things.
So what's the status today? Where are things at? Is there any legal framework that's been initiated to get this looked at, to get this undone?
Well, people have been working at this for quite since 1893. And recently there's a group that I've been working with, Edmund K. Silva Jr., who would be called perhaps the dynastic king. He's been working at this. His and his family and his ancestors have been working at this for many, many years. There's that one part of it. There's another part, another fellow who is a couple of professors from the University of Hawaii who have done a lot of research into the, the legal things that went on. So a lot of this is being brought out now. Some people have filed in international court. One person, Ken Osai, has filed in international court to have the Hawaiian kingdom recognized again. And now, because of Mauna Kea, what happened in Mauna Kea about a year ago, a big telescope was intended to be built there, and they had started moving equipment up there, and it was stopped by the people. They have started their own really ground roots, Aloha Aina, Aha Aloha Aina, which is like a group of from the ground to, well, let's see what we can do. And let's start being the Kingdom of Hawaii, just not calling it that. Just start taking care of the land, taking care of the people, and coming together. So there are a lot of parts of this that I feel are now out in the open, and they are starting to come together. It's just been a very challenging process over the last over 123 years to there's been so much going on that there has been a lot going on, but right now it's really come to the surface with Mauna Kea, with what happened on Mauna Kea. So that was
the spark that got this thing moving.
Well, it's a part that got the recent part of it moving, and I think a lot of ground forces now are coming together. So I feel very positive about it, and I think it would be great for the islands to come back to managing this place the way it was before. So,
gotcha.
Okay, that's kind of the way it
KP,
is.
We're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. This is your first time on the show. We'll have you back again. You know,
well,
what the heck?
I'd be glad to be a part of it. Thank you much for asking me, Mike.
Hey, glad to have you. The pleasure is mine. Everybody, have a good evening, and we'll talk to you again soon. Everybody, take care. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Aloha.